Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the nation from my flagship station, WSB in Atlanta, Georgia, beamed out by satellite and the series of tubes known as the internet across the nation. Delighted to have you with me. The phone number, if you would like to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Well, I got to click open a ton of browser tabs here because we got to talk about some news. We got to talk raw politics here. To begin, I got to set the stage for you. The Democrats have gone to war with each other. They're taking a pause on fighting Republicans. You know, I say all the time, something in my eye, eyelash. There is, so if you ever read Lord of the Rings, I can hear my wife and she's not even in the room or near me. And just because I've mentioned Lord of the Rings, I can hear her uttering profanity. You know, I took her to see the first movie. She got up and left 15 minutes before it was over. And I got outside. She said, well, did they get rid of that damn ring? I said, no, there are two more movies. And she went and saw both of them with me and hated every minute of it. Nonetheless, when you read Lord of the Rings or watch the movie, something Peter Jackson got, when the forces of Mordor are not fighting the free men of Middle-earth and the hobbits and the elves, when they're alone by themselves, the orcs, the trolls, the rest of them, they are as nasty to each other as they are to the forces of Middle-earth. The forces of Mordor are as awful to each other as they are to the free men and hobbits of Middle-earth. This reminds me of the Democrats. No, but seriously, the Democrats are as nasty to each other as they are to the Republicans, and they only unify when they see Republicans, like the orcs unify. Oh, human, we must kill human. They kill the human. They go back to killing each other. The Democrats are nasty to each other, and their civil war is blowing out in the open because of Joe Manchin. He's refusing to be bullied, and the Democrats love to bully. I got a couple of clips from Joe Manchin. You got to listen here. This is Joe Manchin. I believe this is him on CNN.
He will not have my vote on 3.5, and Chuck knows that, and we've talked about this. We've already put out $5.4 trillion, and we've tried to help Americans in every way we possibly can, and a lot of the help that we put out there is still there, and it's going to run clear until next year, 2022. What's the urgency? What's the urgency that we have? It's not the same urgency that we have with the American Rescue Plan. We got that out the door quickly. That was about $2 billion, $2 trillion.
So a whole lot of money still out there. Here he is in more detail.
And that's fine. He can't. He will not have my vote on 3.5, and Chuck knows that, and we've talked about this. We've already put out $5.4 trillion. And we've tried to help Americans in every way we possibly can. And a lot of the help that we put out there is still there, and it's going to run clear until next year, 2022. What's the urgency? What's the urgency that we have? It's not the same urgency that we have with the American Rescue Plan. We got that out the door quickly. That was about $2 billion, $2 trillion. And on top of that, you know, all the things we've had with the CARES package, everything leading up to that. So we have done an awful lot, and there's still an awful lot of people that need help. But you have 11 million jobs that aren't filled right now. 8 million people are still unemployed. Something's not matching up. Don't you think we ought to hit the pause and find out the vulnerability that we have, Dana, right now? We don't know what happened with this COVID. It's awful coming back the way it is with the vengeance. We don't know about inflation. We know it's running rampant right now. I can tell you in West Virginia, inflation's running rampant. And on top of that, the challenges we're going to have, geopolitical challenges, shouldn't we be prepared?
Shouldn't we be prepared? He's worried about inflation. He's worried about the debt. He's worried about all these things and pointing out how much money we've already put out there that hasn't been spent yet. Now, there are two more clips of Joe Manchin. You've got to hear these clips because you've got to understand the war it has sparked within the Democratic Party. First of all, he has the audacity to take on House progressives. Keep in mind, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and other progressives from the House have been out attacking Joe Manchin for 2 weeks. In fact, when the sun rose this morning, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had out another tweet that Joe Manchin is in the pocket of Exxon.
I guess they have leverage, just like you have leverage. They're using their leverage, the House progressives, just like you are.
That's fine. And if they can go home and tell people that, hey, I don't care about the roads and bridges, you don't need it. I don't care about internet service, you don't need that. I don't care about fixing water and sewer lines. I don't care about the hard infrastructure that's left go deferred for the last 30 years. I don't care about any of that. I can't go home and say that in West Virginia. We need all that. We have the worst bridges in the country.
Do you take this threat seriously by the progressives?
They'll have to do what they have to do. I mean, I'm not involved with the House and the House rules or any of that. Okay, they're going to do what they think is best. And if they play politics with the needs of America, I can tell you, America will recoil.
And they say you're playing politics.
I don't think so. But the bottom line is, if it's such good politics and they think $3.5 trillion, why are they rushing it now? Why don't they use that for a political?
All right, let's talk about what's in.
Campaign trail and say, and luck for me, and we'll spend $3.5
billion. He's not going to be played by, he's tired of being attacked by AOC. She wasn't very diplomatic about it. Last clip on Joe Manchin.
Doing such a quick period of time.
But can you be specific? Okay, let's talk about the dollar sign.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific number in mind?
Here's a number you should be getting to. First of all, I have agreed to get on to the reconciliation because that's the time for us to make financial adjustments and changes. I thought the 2017 tax code and tax law, the way it was changed, was very, very, very unfair, and it was weighted to the wealthy.
So what's the number?
And the bottom line is, what the number would be, what's going to be competitive in our tax code. I believe that the corporate rate should be at 25, not 21.
But what's the overall number for the budget bill?
I think that you're going to have to look at it and find out what you're able to do through a reasonable, responsible way.
So then how do you know that it's not 3.5?
It's going to be at 1.5. We don't know where it's going to be.
So you think ballpark 1.5?
It's not going to be at 3.5, I can assure you. But with that, whatever it is, once you have a competitive tax code that you can compete globally, and then you should look at what the need is. What's the urgency and the need that we have?
And I want to get to that, but just because this is the thing that people consume. Do you have a ceiling?
My ceiling is this. The need of the American people and for us to basically take in consideration inflation. Mm-hmm. No one's concerning about the debt. You know, our debt as of Friday was $28.75 trillion. And we're not even talking about that. No one's talking about that.
So you just said 1.5. It sounds like 1.5.
I'm just saying that basically, well, I've looked at numbers. If we have a competitive tax code from a non-competitive, it doesn't help the working person. It was done in 2017. That's in the 1.5 range, okay? If that's where it is, shouldn't you be looking at what does it take now to meet the urgent needs that we haven't already met?
So Joe Manchin, to summarize all of this, Joe Manchin saying that progressives want to spend too much money. He wants to spend between $1 and $1.5 trillion. He thinks there is enough money circulating out there already, unspent, untapped, that's already been allocated, that they got enough wiggle room, and they got to prioritize. Is their priority the Green New Deal, which will hurt West Virginia, or is their priority broadband infrastructure, roads, bridges, airports, and things like that, which is actual infrastructure? The progressives are having none of it because they got a plan that was so big and so unwieldy, they could call it whatever they wanted to call it. They didn't have to focus on it. And so enter Bernie Sanders. You've had AOC and the rest in the House attacking Joe Manchin, but none of the senators have said anything. Sanders is in charge of the budget committee in the Senate, and he is having none of it. He is livid at Manchin. Sanders has kept his mouth shut until this weekend and is beginning to open fire.
No, it is absolutely not acceptable to me. I don't think it's acceptable to the president, to the American people, or to the overwhelming majority of the people in the Democratic caucus. Look, we worked with Senator Manchin to pass the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, which was enormously consequential and helpful to working class families in getting us out of the economic disaster that befell us as a result of COVID. I believe we're going to all sit down and work together and come up with a $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, which deals with the enormously unmet needs of working families. You know, we've got to lower the cost of prescription drugs for people. We've got to expand Medicare to include dental, hearing aids, and eyeglasses. We have to maintain the $300 direct payment.
Sanders and AOC and the progressives, they want $3.5 trillion, and Manchin say no. And here's what you have to understand. They have to have Manchin. Manchin doesn't need them. They need Manchin, unless they just want the issue. But if they want the issue, the problem for the Democrats is the data out there right now suggests that they are headed for a serious bruising. they are headed for serious problems. And the details of their tax plan are not helpful for them. The Wall Street Journal. House Democrats detailed their proposed tax increases on Monday, calling for raising the corporate tax rate to 26.5% from 21%, a 3 percentage point surtax on top earners, and a capital gains tax increase. Lawmakers plan to vote this week in the House Ways and Means Committee on the proposals, which would raise trillions of dollars from corporations and high-income tax holds, households. Democrats aim to use the money to pay for expanding the social safety net and combating climate change, and the committee's proposal shows how Democrats could find enough money to pay for almost all of their spending agenda aimed at $3.5 trillion over a decade. In several areas, the committee proposed tax increases that weren't as far-reaching as those the Biden administration had sought. It didn't include, for example, a provision opposed by banks that would require annual reporting on account flows to the Internal Revenue Service. The House plan doesn't change the income tax rules that allow unrealized capital gains to go untaxed to death. Rural Democrats that oppose the administration capital gains plan and the chances of becoming law look slimmer. The committee made up the money elsewhere with changes to the estate tax, the 3 percentage point surcharge on people making more than $5 million, and several tax increases that would affect closely held companies whose owners pay those business taxes on their individual tax returns. So in other words, if you have an LLC like I do, your taxes go up. Now, here's more of it from the Politico playbook this morning. Not going over well as the Democrats consider this stuff. A series of tax increases put forward by the Democrats that align with Joe Biden's agenda and yet are opposed by Joe Manchin. They include the capital gains tax increase. They include the corporate tax increase. They include a tax increase on individual income earners. It is the biggest tax increase in decades, a $2.9 trillion tax increase. The corporate tax increase would go up higher than Joe Manchin wanted, which is 25% according to Joe Manchin. The capital gains tax increase would go from 23.8% to 28.8%. The 3% surcharge on people making more than $5 million, they would expect it to raise $127 billion. There would be an increase in the minimum tax U.S. companies' foreign income makes from 16.5% from 10.5%. That's lower than what Joe Biden wanted. There would be a boost in IRS tax enforcement. They would give the IRS more money. They would also raise taxes on tobacco and nicotine, which is striking. Now, here's the problem. Moderate Democrats are wary of these tax increases. These are the largest tax increases proposed ever if you adjust for inflation. The Democrats are just saying they're the biggest in decades. They're huge. They are huge. And it would cover most of what they want, much of which is opposed by the moderates and by reasonable Americans. The Democrats have gone to war with each other over, one, how much to spend, and two, how to tax people for it. They want to tax capital gains. They want to investigate bank transactions. Basically, any transaction over $600 made out of your checking account, Joe Biden wants it reported to the IRS. The House Democrats say no to this. Bernie Sanders says yes to this. Joe Manchin says no to this. They can't rally enough Democratic votes to get this done. And you know what it does is it potentially kills the bipartisan infrastructure spending plan of $1.5 trillion. The Democrats want an all or nothing strategy. And it appears they're going to get nothing out of this because they're going to war with each other. It does not help the progressives to attack Joe Manchin. All that does is make Joe Manchin more popular in West Virginia and ensure he's more likely to get reelected. And they can't seem to understand the politics of this outside of Congress are different from the politics inside of it in Congress, and they haven't figured out a way to reconcile the two, the result of which is they're fighting each other. The Republicans can just sit on the sidelines and do nothing because the Democrats cannot find consensus among themselves on how to get Joe Biden's agenda done. And by the way, if they don't get this done, Joe Biden's agenda the rest of his term, at least through the midterms, is scuttled, and then the Republicans will take it back, and they won't get anything done. I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio, and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot, and I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs, and I've traded it in for my X chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my X chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up. It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchaireric.com now. That's the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchaireric.com now, letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Take my advice. Get an X chair. Hi, folks. It is Eric Erickson. You can call in if you want to be on my show, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Remember all the buzz about the over-horizon capabilities of the Biden administration? One of the selling points Joe Biden made for why we can leave Afghanistan is we had, quote unquote, over-the-horizon capabilities and a strategy to take on Afghanistan. Well, Axios is reporting this. The Biden administration's over-the-horizon strategy in Afghanistan is drawing serious questions from lawmakers and counterterrorism experts as the U.S. withdrawal shifts calculations about threats and capabilities. Tensions have ramped up after Joe Biden's national security officials and senators from both parties clashed in a meeting. Critics tell Axios that Biden and his team have yet to provide sufficiently detailed plans or explanations about the counterterrorism strategy to lawmakers. The so-called over-the-horizon capabilities Biden has repeatedly touted make identifying and striking terrorists with aerial surveillance and drones launched from outside the country the linchpin of the post-withdrawal strategy. But, remember, Biden retaliated in Afghanistan with a missile strike after our U.S. service members were killed there, and it turns out he didn't actually kill any terrorists. He killed a civilian employee of an American charitable organization. It is no longer in dispute that the man was not a terrorist. And yet Biden played up that assassination. It's not going well. One source to Axios, who read aloud from notes taken during the call, said the conversation grew very heated when Senator McConnell asked, given the fuel poured on the fire of terrorism, what are your plans to conduct the war on terrorism? Even though we seem to have given up, they have not. Ooh. Colin Cowell, the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, replied, the intelligence community has assessed that what's left of al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan does not pose an immediate threat to the homeland. We have repositioned forces to the Gulf to provide an indicator and warning. We maintain strike aircraft and authorities to do so. We must maintain vigilance to the threat in Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, and elsewhere. It doesn't really sound like they answered his question that much, which is not good. And again, I give you Barack Obama's CIA interim director who said this on the Sunday shows.
The Taliban winning the war in Afghanistan, and then the way our exit happened has absolutely inspired jihadists all over the world. The Taliban is saying, we just didn't defeat the United States. We defeated NATO. We defeated the world's greatest military power ever. So there's a celebration going on. We defeated the Soviet Union, then it fell. Now we've defeated NATO, right? Maybe they can fall too. I think not only will jihadists be inspired, but a lot of them are going to come to Afghanistan to be part of the celebration, to be part of Jihadist Central. So after 9/11, they all scattered from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a flow back in, and that's one of the things that makes Afghanistan more dangerous than other spots on the planet.
And we've given up our abilities to gather on-the-ground intelligence in Afghanistan. Well done, Joe Biden. You've made us less safe. Hi there. Welcome to the program. Across the nation, it's Eric Erickson here, and I am happy to have you call in. 877-973-7425. I hope you had a great weekend. I myself did have a good weekend. Took the family into the city and fought traffic all day long. Yeah, you know, the one upside of the pandemic, if you live in urban environments or you travel to them, was traffic largely went away. My goodness gracious, we went up to Atlanta, live about an hour outside the city, drove to Atlanta, and traffic wasn't bad until you got into the city. And then it was a mess on all the side streets. The interstate was fine. It was the side streets. Now, there was a Georgia Tech game, so that kind of clogged the city, but all sorts of other stuff going on. It was just a wreck. I got exhausted from driving in traffic on Saturday. It wasn't super restful. I mean, we had a great time as a family. So my 12-year-old has suddenly decided he wants to get into skateboarding. And you know, I gotta tell you, but so my wife loves to skateboard. She used to skateboard, and I had to tell my son, I said, you know, you just need to understand, you know, skateboard. My wife was not into skateboard culture per se. My son was like, you just got to understand skateboard culture it's something. So we go up to Atlanta and we go to a skateboard store because he wants pads and wrist guards, not necessarily needing a helmet, but everything else. And so we go into the store. The guys behind the counter are drinking beer. The back of the place smells like there's something not right. Very, very nice people, super nice people. But so the kid leaves, gets in the car. He says, man, that was super sketchy. Like, I tried to warn you about skateboard culture. Very nice, salt of the earth people. But yeah, it's just not a culture he was expecting. And suddenly he had to realize something was up. All right. I got to read you guys the story. This is from CNN. And I've talked about it a little bit. And I want to delve into this a little more. A hospital in upstate New York is pausing deliveries of babies because of the number of maternity unit employee resignations over the state's COVID-19 vaccine requirements. Lewis County General Hospital in Lowville, about 60 miles northeast of Syracuse, will stop deliveries after September 24th, said Gerald Kayer, chief executive of the Lewis County Health System. We are unable to safely staff the service after September 24th. The number of resignations received leaves us no choice but to pause delivering babies at Lewis County General Hospital. It is my hope that the Department of Health will work with us in support of pausing the service rather than closing the maternity department. Since former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced all hospital and long-term care facility employees must have at least one dose of COVID vaccine by September 27, 30 hospital employees, 21 of whom were working in clinical areas, have resigned. Six of the resignations were in the maternity unit. There are 165 employees throughout the health system who haven't received a single dose of the vaccine. Our vaccine rate is 73%. 464 individuals are now vaccinated. 165 employees are not. It's not clear what they will do. We have 2 weeks remaining for 165 staff to receive the first dose of the vaccine. And at the same time, we must develop contingency plans for services we believe are at risk. Some of those employees aren't going to get it. Some of those employees aren't going to engage on the issue. I need to be just transparent with you. I'm tired of talking about this damn virus and the vaccine. I'm tired of it. I've been talking about it since January of last year. I was talking about COVID before anybody else in radio was, to my knowledge, because I saw what was happening in China. It was very obvious to me, having lived overseas, knowing travel routes and populations and everything else, it was very obvious it was going to come here. If you're a new listener of this program, I was telling people in January of last year, you need to be deliberate when you go to the grocery store. Start buying up stuff. Don't buy out. Buy in limited quantities, but buy extra. Every time you go to the grocery store, buy extra. And I, back in January of last year, started buying extra hand sanitizer, extra toilet paper, extra paper towels, extra meat for the freezer, things like that. And we, as a family, never ran out of toilet paper, never ran out of hand sanitizer. There were weeks on end where you couldn't find it at the grocery store. We were winding up having, as a family, to give toilet paper to friends of ours who couldn't find rolls of toilet paper, and we were able to find them. We had found them, stockpiled them, kept them, and were giving it to other people. I've been a realist on this, and I don't know that people in government are realistic anymore. First of all, they've screwed up how they talk about it. They've screwed up the messaging. They've done a bad job the entire time in trying to convince people to take the medicine, take the vaccine. I mean, I think people should get it. I think it works. So many of the concerns I have from friends of mine about the vaccine are concerns that are misguided, misdirected, misstated, or just plain illegitimate. But I'm tired of the topic. I don't want to keep talking about it. I feel the need to talk about it as the news arises, and this is news. At a hospital, healthcare workers aren't getting it. Do you know the number one reason I've encountered among people I know directly, not people who listen to this program, not people reaching out, but in my group of people who I know, the group of people I know, the group of people I know well, the group of people I know who haven't taken the vaccine, who are reasonable, thoughtful individuals, the number one reason is because their doctor or a nurse who they know hadn't gotten it or told them they didn't need it. Number one reason. How can you blame those people? Because someone they know, someone they trust, decided they didn't need it. Number two group of people I know, young women, particularly nurses, who have not but wish to get pregnant, who are concerned. And no amount of government data, no amount of research, no amount of scientific research at this moment will convince them otherwise. Now, why do I say at this moment? Well, because we're September. It's the ninth month of September. Widespread distribution of the vaccine really didn't start until January. So we're only now, and there were some people beforehand, but we're only now seeing children born whose parents got the vaccine, some of whom were pregnant when they got it. It's going to take a few years of development to make sure the kids are okay. Now, scientifically, the data says they'll be fine. But a lot of people have a wait-and-see approach. You know, the state of Missouri, its motto is the show me state. There are a lot of people who are native Missourians and don't even realize it. Show them the data. Show them the research. Show them the children whose parents had COVID and that they're perfectly fine. They don't have abnormal risks of autism. They don't have abnormal birth defects. They don't have abnormal risks of other things. Show them that and they'll be fine. But it's too soon to show them. It's too soon to tell. And at a time where the American birth rate is on decline, I have a real hard philosophical time trying to tell a young woman who's a nurse, you must take this vaccine. Trust us. Because if anything, the government of the United States over the last number of years has shown us there are ample reasons not to trust the government of the United States. There are ample reasons not to trust the government, regardless of party, by the way, regardless of party, the healthcare bureaucrats of America, there are ample reasons not to trust them. It was foolish to make a mandate. And by the way, this is not the only hospital. There's one in Washington State as well. Same situation, Washington State, maternity ward having to close down. I thought they were the same. I thought maybe I was just reading from a Seattle news story. Nope, there's one in Washington State, same situation. They're losing nurses. In my local community, local hospitals are short-staffed in part because of the situation, in part because they have a lot of people who don't think they need the vaccine. They're not sure of it. It tends to be younger people. In fact, the data suggests younger people are increasingly skeptical of taking the vaccine. There were other ways to do this. There were always other ways. And you know, one of the chief ways to deal with the situation is the risk is on you. Put the burden of risk on them. I got vaccinated. My wife got vaccinated. Our kids got vaccinated. My wife has already scheduled her booster shot. She's got lung cancer. Her doctors tell her she needs it. She's scheduled that she doesn't want it. She's scared of it because her reaction to the second shot was actually really bad. So she doesn't want the booster, but she's now went to a doctor this morning, her allergist, who said, you've got to get the booster shot. It's a lower dose. You shouldn't react to it. Don't worry about it, but you've got to have it. So she's getting it. I'm ready to get it. I would go tomorrow and get the booster shot. But some people don't want it. And for the government to make them get it, it builds resentment. It fosters resentment. It fosters concern. There are people willfully manufacturing misinformation and disinformation about it. But overwhelmingly, it's a choice. And why can't we let people put the burden of risk on them and the rest of us go about our lives? You know, so there's a big, I didn't play any of the audio. I didn't want the audio, but there's a lot of audio out there today from people on television now pushing for the federal government to have a vaccine mandate to get on an airplane where there is no transmission. Now, their argument for the situation is that you could potentially go somewhere else and pick it up. It's not that you'll be transmitted it on airplanes. The data is not there. I mean, we got mandatory masks on planes. Now, part of me, if we would get rid of the mask mandate on airplanes, I'd say go for it. Because I think it's ridiculous at this point to wear masks on planes. You know, so I got the opportunity a while back to fly on a private plane. It is not a regular routine experience. I can't really afford to do this. Some people can. You know, if you pack one of these planes, like, so I use a company called Priority Jet up in Cobb County, Georgia, and they've got a Citation XL. It's got 8 seats. If you decide you want to go to Las Vegas or something, you put 8 of your friends on that plane. You each basically pay in a first class ticket. So it actually, when you fill up the plane, it becomes an affordable thing to do for a lot of people, more than you realize. But I can't do it normally. And even with it, they reached out to me ahead of time and they said, hey, just keep in mind that you're going through a federal airports. You still got to wear your masks in the airport. Even though you may be flying private, you can't not wear your mask in the airport because it's controlled by the federal government. And the federal government has the mask mandate. Now, I think if you got a vaccine card, and they tell you, okay, you don't have to wear your mask on a train anymore, or public transportation, if you got a vaccine mandate, maybe that'll turn some people towards it. But I just don't think we should have mandates. At this point, it just seems obvious to me the burden of risk should be on the people who willfully chose not to get the vaccine. 99% of the deaths in this country right now are people who are unvaccinated. They've taken the risk. Sadly, some of them have lost. But they made the choice to live their life as they saw fit. And they lost. We shouldn't shame them. We shouldn't condemn them. We shouldn't berate them. And a lot of people on the left are mocking them. You shouldn't do that either. Don't mock the dead. But when you got hospitals that are having to close down maternity wards because young nurses who are trained in the medical field don't want to get the vaccine, maybe, just maybe, that should present as a red flag that something's not right here with the mandates, and maybe we should go about doing this differently. You know, the Democrats want to spend $3.5 trillion in a reconciliation package in addition to $1.5 trillion in a bipartisan infrastructure bill. That amounts to $5 trillion. Why don't you take that $1 trillion and divide it up among Americans who got vaccinated as an incentive and tell the unvaccinated people, hey, we'll give you some of the money if you go get vaccinated. Financial incentives have a way of getting people to do things they otherwise wouldn't do. You give someone a lot of money and people say, well, we've offered $1,000. We've offered a chance to win a lottery ticket. No, you did not offer high dollar. Everybody's got a price. You start paying people to get vaccinated. You give them a dollar for dollar tax credit on their income taxes. You'll see people get vaccinated, but forcing them, telling them, bullying them, that is least likely to get people vaccinated. The Democrats are funding everything, including unicorn farts in this tax pack, in this tax and reconciliation package. You would think they would cough up tax dollars to incentivize financially people to go get vaccinated and reward those who did the right thing as the incentive to get vaccinated. The fact that they're not doing it tells you a lot of this really is about control and not about getting over COVID. I got to tell you guys about Patriot Mobile. There's no way to transition from that to this, but I do want to tell you about them because they're an awesome company and you can support a company that supports your values. You know, I told you the story earlier that some of these tech companies like Salesforce are paying people to leave Texas. Patriot Mobile is headquartered in Texas, and they support pro-life causes. They actually donate a portion of their profits to pro-life causes. So you become a customer of Patriot Mobile, and part of their proceeds goes to first responder causes, Second Amendment causes, veterans causes, and pro-life causes. They are explicitly a conservative Christian company. They share your values. They want to be your cell phone provider. You don't have to worry about coverage because they got all the coverage and all the towers. All the other guys do because they use the towers the other companies use. They can even roll your phone number over. And right now, you can get a discount on your activation with the offer code Eric. Free activation, in fact. What you do is you go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. Or call 972-PATRIOT. They've got U.S.-based customer service. You never have to worry about calling Karachi or Mumbai for your customer service with Patriot Mobile. They are here in the United States. They've always got special discounts for veterans and first responders and for multi-line accounts if you've got a large household. So go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. patriotmobile.com/ERIC or call them 972-PATRIOT. Tell them I sent you. You get free activation with offer code Eric. That would be my name. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. They're in Noonan, Georgia, but it doesn't matter because wherever you are in the United States, they can help you. They want to help you. They've been doing this since the early 90s. They help big businesses become bigger businesses. They help small businesses navigate the world of lending to become bigger businesses. You need a building. You need to build a building. You need a fleet of vehicles, six-figure and above loans. You go to First Liberty because they make their own lending decisions. They're trying to get to yes where banks are saying no. FirstLibertyGA.com. If you make the financial decisions for a business, reach out to them. FirstLibertyGA.com. Thank you so much to them for sponsoring the program. I got to play you this audio clip. You know, I mentioned this woman in the Los Angeles Times. She's a columnist who said that Larry Elder is the black face of white supremacy. She's doubled down on this.
He's essentially been running his campaign on Fox News and on right-wing media outlets. He's refused to talk to large, you know, to nonpartisan and media outlets and to journalists who are critical of him, has refused to answer difficult questions, often uses the few interviews that he does give as an opportunity to give a performance on social media, denouncing those journalists and playing the victim. But he has been able to reach the minority of voters in California who embrace his white supremacist worldview. And, you know, he's co-opted this line by my fellow columnist from the headline, you know, calling him the black face of white supremacy. But he refuses to engage with the actual substance of our reporting, you know, the idea that his views were shaped by a well-known white supremacist named Jared Taylor, who he repeatedly quoted in early writings, that he plans to reverse all of the state's progress on immigrant rights and racial justice, and that he poses a very real threat to communities of color for all of the reasons that we've reported in the past.
White people telling a black person that he's a white supremacist just might be one of the most white supremacist things you can do. And they're doing it to Larry Elder in California. Newsom still has the edge. In fact, the early voting numbers look good for Newsom. A lot of highly white progressive areas turning out for him. Minority communities not. But Elder could still pull this off.